Hello, and welcome to episode 53 of Stories of Strangeness. I'm Zoe, and this is Mike.
Hello!
And this week is a Mike episode.
Yippity-doo-dah.
I just want to apologise for the late running of this service. There were leaves on the line, or something. Mike had a cold.
Yeah, I got illness from children. Not our child.
Somebody else's. Let's just stop there, love,
and get
into the groove. Off we go.
If I said the wickedest man in the world, would you know who I was talking about?
Ooh, wicked. Are we talking about like, oh, mate, that's wicked?
Absolutely
Is it Ali
not.
G?
No. It's not Ali G, no.
Okay, then I don't know.
Okay, so I'll start. October the 12th, a significant date in a number of years.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, what year?
1492.
Oh gosh, I don't remember that.
Columbus makes landfall in the Caribbean on San Salvador Island. 1692, Governor William of the province of Massachusetts Bay sends a letter ending the Salem witch trials. 1773, America's first insane asylum opens. And in 1875, in the small resort town of Royal Leamington Spa in Warwickshire, England, the wickedest man in the world is born to a strict evangelical family of the radical Protestant sect, the Plymouth Brethren, who believed that most pleasurable things were a sin and in the literal truth of the Bible. They eschewed any form of excess, including wearing nice clothes or eating more than necessary. Fun was a four-letter word to the young Aleister Crowley, and he was bullied at school because he was essentially a shut-in and spent his free time studying the Bible.
Sorry, can I just... Fun was a four-letter word.
I love that phrasing, don't you?
But I... What was it? What is fun?
Fun. Having fun.
Yeah.
But if something is a four-letter word, you say, oh, that's a four-letter word because it's bad.
Like,
so therefore,
fun
was bad.
Okay, I was thinking, are they spelling it different
to me?
I mean,
at least come along for the ride, love.
I'm trying, but you just knocked me for six when you started bringing up Crowley.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Edward Alexander Crowley, known as Aleister, or Alistair, depending on how you pronounce it. I prefer Aleister. Was brought up in relative wealth, his father being a retired engineer who still owned stock in Alton Ales, the family brewing company. Little Aleister would accompany his father on trips around the country, where his father also worked as a minister. Crowley spoke of his father, who died at 58, when Aleister was just 11, as his hero. From this early age, Crowley would display concerning and deviant behaviour, including one experiment at age 14, where he attempted to prove the adage of a cat having nine lives by poisoning a neighbourhood cat with arsenic. Hanging it, stabbing it, burning it, bludgeoning it, and then tossing it out of his bedroom window in the interests of science. It was after his father's death, when he lived alone with his mother, that he began to have poor health. Doctors said he would not last long, and it was then his uncle stepped in and took him to live in the country. There, Crowley learned what fun was. His uncle took him mountaineering, hiking, and even paid for a prostitute for a then 15-year-old Aleister. His uncle, thinking Aleister didn't have much time, wanted him to experience some pleasure in life. When Aleister returned home to his mother, having fully recovered from his malady, he decided to rebel against their beliefs in the most extreme ways. In his own words, he wanted sin, the supreme spiritual sin. He slept with the family maid on his mother's bed, to spite her, resulting in the firing of the maid and her subsequent destitution. In his later youth, he experimented with cocaine and developed his desires in local brothels with women and men alike. Around this time, he discovered esoteric mysticism and adopted the name Aleister, due to the discovery that it fit the formula for the most favourable name to become famous in Kabbalistic numerology. He studied at Trinity College in Cambridge, where he studied philosophy and later literature, and also focused on poetry and mountaineering. He climbed Beachy Head in 1894, followed by joining the Scottish Mountaineering Club and climbing the Eiger, Trift, Jungfrau, Munch and Wetterhorn the year after. Crowley also became adept at chess, practicing for 2 hours per day, and became the president of the chess club at Cambridge. Crowley even briefly considered a professional career in chess. However, he left Cambridge without a degree, having become disillusioned and seeking hidden esoteric knowledge. In 1897, he obtained a book called The Book of Black Magic and of Pacts, and then The Cloud Upon the Sanctuary, both of which stoked the fires of his curiosity and passion for the occult. He had heard of an invisible college and spent his days searching it out. Eventually, his inquiries led to an invitation from the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, a secret society whose members included Bram Stoker, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and poet W.B. Yeats. An offshoot of Rosicrucian Freemasonry, the Golden Dawn's main aim was to study and practice Kabbalah, the ancient Hebrew esoteric study of consciousness and the cosmos, that teaches of multiple realms between the 3D physical world. Practitioners believe that these other realms hold higher consciousness and ultimately enlightenment. Access to these realms is attained by the study of sacred geometry, numerology known as gematria, and synchronicity. The Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn took the Eastern mystic philosophies and combined them with Western Gnosticism and developed magical rituals that invoked spiritual entities to help perfect the self. Crowley tore through these studies with a vigour never before seen, with the help of his personal tutor, Alan Bennett, not the playwright. Crowley would eventually come to see the society as a bitter disappointment who only played at magic and tried to take over the sect. Many historians view Crowley's joining of the order as the beginning of its end. During his time there, Crowley adopted several epithets, including the Beast 666 and Frater Perdurabo, which he translated as, "I will endure until the end." Crowley clashed with W.B. Yeats, and the two had a mutual distaste for one another, mainly due to Crowley's bisexuality, lewd poetry, libertine lifestyle, and general and flagrant misdemeanours of any and all laws, including those of the sect itself. His use of psychoactive drugs to enhance mystical experiences flew in the face of the order, many of whom were teetotal aristocrats. Frightened by Crowley's admissions that he wanted to summon demons and angels, Crowley contended that Yeats was jealous of his poetic ability. This feud would keep Crowley from progressing within the order. And just a little sidebar, the feud between Yeats and Crowley entered into the mystical realms where they basically tried to curse each other for years and ultimately ended in a fist fight, abandoning all magic, and Yeats kicked Crowley down a set of stairs.
Excellent.
In 1899, frustrated with his lack of progress within the group, Crowley went to Paris to meet with S.L. MacGregor Mathers, the head of the order, who was supposed to be in touch with the Secret Chiefs, a group of highly skilled esoteric practitioners who had mastered the arcane arts and called Mahatmas by Madame Blavatsky. They were able to perform real acts of magic, including things like communicate telepathically and to be able to materialise at will. Crowley convinced Mathers to accept him into the group's inner second order. Mathers, having had issues with the London branch over his autocratic rule, admitted Crowley personally. Under Mathers' orders, Crowley attempted to seize the Vault of the Adepts, a temple of the order in West Kensington, from them. The case ended up in court, and the court ruled in favour of the London branch as they had paid for the space. Through Mathers, Crowley learned more about magic, both white and black variants. Mathers had translated the Lesser Key of Solomon and written the Kabbalah Revealed, which he translated from the Hebrew Zohar, and also discovered another Hebrew treatise on magic, the Book of the Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Mage, which was a book about how to impose your will on nature using contemplation, prayer, and abstinence. Abramelin taught that the powers of good, the angelic white magic, is more powerful than evil or black magic. and by the power of prayer, one could invoke one's guardian angel to utilise the powers of darkness safely. While living in Chancery Lane in London, Crowley invited his mentor, Alan Bennett, to live with him. Alan taught him about ceremonial magic and the ritual use of drugs, and together they performed rituals from the Goetia, or Goetia, described by Heinrich Cornelius Agrippa in his three books of occult philosophy as unfortunate, by the commerces of unclean spirits made up of the rites of wicked curiosities, unlawful charms, and deprecations, and is abandoned and execrated by all laws. Now obsessed with Abramelin, Crowley bought a house on Loch Ness with the express purpose of performing the Abramelin ceremony, which was intended to invoke angels or demons. The ritual required upwards of 18 months of preparation and a 6-month cleansing period, during which the magician must refrain from any mind-altering substance, sex, or any sin in order to purify them enough to begin the ritual. Crowley, who was a regular visitor to prostitutes from his youth, described his first homosexual encounter in Stockholm in 1896 as also his first significant mystical experience that brought him an encounter with an imminent deity, and who got addicted to heroin after being prescribed it by a doctor. He must have found the whole thing quite a challenge.
Yeah.
The ritual itself, which includes an introduction stating that no one should perform it, involved binding and commanding the 12 dukes of hell, including Lucifer, Satan, Leviathan, and Belial, in the magician's mental universe in order to purify the magician's body and soul of their negative influence. The magician would then be able to contact their guardian angel, the end result of which would be access to spells of wealth, invisibility, and powers of hypnosis. He wanted somewhere far from prying eyes and eavesdropping ears. He needed a place where the doors opened to the north with a terrace which he could cover with fine river sand, and a part of the house where spirits could congregate. He found it after a year's search at Beleskin House, named for Baal, the blood god of the ancient Babylonians, on the southeast shore of Loch Ness. Eventually, tired of performing the ritual daily with no tangible results, and with a growing schism in the Golden Dawn, Crowley gave up partway through to return to London. People have speculated that in leaving the ritual unfinished, Crowley opened the gates to hell. Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin was an ardent fan of Crowley and bought Beleskin House. He is quoted as saying that the house was haunted by Crowley's demons. Crowley also spent time in Mexico, where he continued experimenting with ritual magic, working with John Dee's Enochian invocations, and also started a relationship with a local woman. He later claimed to have been initiated into Freemasonry while there, as well as writing more poetry, a play, and climbing more mountains. From there, Crowley moved to San Francisco, where he became enamored with Eastern mystical philosophies. And this is a direct quote. "The Chinaman is not obsessed by the delusion that the profits and pleasures of life are really valuable. He gets all the more out of them because he knows their worthlessness, and is consequently immune from the disappointment which inevitably embitters those who seek to lay up treasure on earth. A man must be a very dull brute if, attaining all his ambitions, he finds satisfaction. The Eastern, from Lao Tzu and the Buddha to Zoroaster and Ecclesiastes, feels in his very bones the futility of earthly existence. It is the first postulate of his philosophy." He then headed for Hawaii, then on to the Orient, including Japan, Hong Kong, and Ceylon. He then toured India and studied Raja Yoga, and claimed to have achieved the spiritual state of Dhyana. Unfortunately, he caught malaria and had to recuperate in Calcutta and Rangoon. Once well, he attempted to climb the K2, which had not been done at the time. This resulted in him getting influenza, malaria, and snow blindness.
Gosh.
The party reached 200,000 feet before having to abandon and turn back. In 1902, he went to Paris and became part of the Parisian art scene, and wrote a series of poems based on the work of Rodin, who he had met. It was here he met W. Somerset Maugham, who based the character of Oliver Haddo in his novel The Magician on Crowley. Crowley returned to Burlesque in 1903 and met Rose Edith Kelly. She was arranged to be married in a match made by her parents. After a day of knowing her, Crowley persuaded her to elope with him to avoid the prearranged nuptials. They honeymooned in Paris, Cairo, and Ceylon, and Crowley wrote a series of love poems entitled Rosamundi and Other Love Songs, and also wrote a religious satire, Why Jesus Wept, during this time. It was in Egypt, though, that Crowley would have one of his most influential spiritual encounters. In February of 1904, Crowley and Rose arrived in Cairo and rented an apartment. Crowley began to invoke ancient Egyptian deities and studying Islamic mysticism and Arabic. According to Crowley, Rose would often become delirious and informed him that they are waiting for you. And on the 29th of March, she proclaimed, "The equinox of the gods has come." Crowley took her to a museum where Rose pointed out the god that had been calling to him. It was Horus, and she also showed him the mortuary stele of Ankh-Efen-Khonsu. Khonsu? That exhibit was numbered 666, which Crowley took as a sign. This led to him finally contacting his guardian angel, a spirit known as Iwas. Over a period of 3 days, Iwas apparently dictated a work which Crowley wrote down and became the Book of the Law, the most famous dictum of which is, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." The book stated that humanity was entering a new aeon, and that Crowley was to be the prophet, guiding humanity to learn to live in tune with their will. This began Crowley's mystical philosophy of Thelema. Crowley was unconvinced of the authenticity of his experience, despite writing a whole book from it. He was instructed to take the stele from the museum, fortify his own island, and translate the book into every language, which he ignored in resentment. Instead, he continued to wander. By this time, Rose had given birth to Lilith, their first child.
Lilith, okay, yeah.
Crowley had a disastrous attempt to climb Kanchenjunga, during which he is said to have ignored pleas for help from his party during an avalanche which killed 4 men, preferring to sit in his tent and drink tea. Then he met up with Rose and Lilith in Calcutta before shooting 2 attempted muggers, forcing him to leave the country and head for China. Dismounting the pony he rode in from Burma to stretch his legs, he then remounted, but the pony reared and sent them both over a 40-foot cliff.
Gosh.
Laying at the bottom to find himself completely unscathed, he became convinced that he was protected from harm due to his being a prophet and magus.
40 feet?
Yep.
Whoa!
And walked away without a scratch. He threw himself back into his invocations again to try and regain contact with Iwas. Rose and Lilith returned to Europe. Crowley went to Shanghai to meet up with his old friend Elaine Simpson, known as Semper Fidelis in the Order, who was fascinated by his Book of the Law, and they performed rituals together to try and contact Iwas. On returning to England via Japan, Canada and New York, Crowley learned that Lilith had died of typhoid in Rangoon, which he blamed on Rose's increasing alcoholism. His health deteriorated and he underwent several surgeries. He began short affairs with actress Vera Neville and author Ada Leveson, while Rose bore their second child, Lola Zaza, in early 1907. Crowley and Simpson had maintained contact via means of astral journeys, where they met psychically on the astral plane. Simpson's mother was not enamoured with this and spoke publicly about Crowley entering her daughter's bedroom at night, for which Crowley dubbed her a ghastly hag and said, "The woman must have been as witless as she was worthless to splash her own daughter with such ditch water."
Wow, that's an insult.
Eventually their rituals bore fruit and Iwas appeared to them on the astral plane, in brilliant blue and holding a wand. Iwas told Crowley to return to Egypt, but not to take Simpson unless she agreed to have sex with him, as otherwise she was worthless.
Excellent.
Simpson remained faithful to her husband. Crowley joined forces with his old mentor, George Cecil Jones, and continued to perform the Abramelin rituals at the Ashdown Park Hotel in Surrey. He claimed that he had attained samadhi, or union with the Godhead. He also wrote an essay on the psychology of hashish, which he claimed was an aid to mysticism. In late 1907, he claimed to have been contacted again by Iwas, who dictated two more books to him, Liber Seventh and Liber Cordis Cincti Serpente, both of which joined the Book of the Law in the corpus of the Holy Books of Thelema. These were followed by seven more books, all obtained from supernatural sources. In November 1907, Crowley decided to found a new occult order as a successor to Golden Dawn, called AA. It's not just AA, and it's not to be confused with Alcoholics Anonymous or the UK Roadside Breakdown cover people.
Yeah.
It's actually a capital A, and then a triangle of three dots, and then another capital of A, and another triangle of three dots. Now, the triangle of three dots is generally known as the therefore symbol.
A therefore.
But it's just pronounced A. The Latin name given for it is Argentium Astrum, or Silver Star. The rites owed much to Golden Dawn, but with Thelemic basis. Crowley divorced Rose in 1909, increasingly frustrated with her alcoholism, but cited his own adultery as grounds. Lola was given to Rose's care, and Crowley and Rose remained friends. He then travelled to Algeria, touring the desert, and invoked the 30 Aethiers of Enochian magic, publishing the results in the Equinox as The Vision and the Voice, a book that got him sued by the Golden Dawn for revealing their secrets. The court found in favour of Crowley, and the publicity swelled the ranks of AA. Crowley performed public rituals with AA, with members personifying deities. It was first performed at AA headquarters, with peyote in the fruit punch served to the audience to enhance the experience.
Excellent.
Which I'm sure it did. In 1912, Crowley published The Book of Lies, often cited as his most cohesive work. The Ordo Templi Orientis, another occult order, accused Crowley of stealing their secrets for the book. Crowley convinced Theodore Royce, head of the OTO, that it was just coincidence, and the two became friends. After which, Crowley was appointed as head of the British branch of the OTO, called the Mysterium Mystica Maxima. Crowley also acted as a producer for the Ragged Ragtime Girls, a group of female violinists. Crowley went with them to Moscow in 1913, but there were rumours that he went as a spy for the British intelligence services. By this time, his inheritance had dried up and he was living mostly on subsidies from AA members and dues payments to OTO. He transferred ownership of Beleskin House to MMM for financial reasons. When World War II broke out, Crowley set sail for America and earned money writing for Vanity Fair. He also wrote for a propagandist paper, The Fatherland, expressing his support for Germany against Britain, which got him denounced as a traitor. Eventually, he headed back to Britain, albeit destitute. The tabloid John Bull attacked him in the press. He was prescribed heroin for his asthma and became addicted.
Surprisingly.
In January 1920, he began to have ideas for an Abbey of Thelema, essentially a commune for Thelemites, and chose Cefalù on Sicily for the location. There, Crowley and his initiates performed rituals to Ra the sun god and occasionally the Gnostic Mass. The place was libertine in function, and children were allowed to witness acts of sex magic. By this time, his heroin addiction dominated his life and his nasal cavity had eroded from cocaine use. He went to Paris in 1922 to attempt to kick his habits and wrote Diary of a Drug Fiend, which the Sunday Express called for a book burning of. Conditions at the Abbey had become unsanitary, with wild dogs and cats allowed to roam free and no cleaning rota. One Thelemite who was made to drink the blood of a sacrificed cat and drank from a polluted stream died from liver infection. His wife, who had come with him, detested the place and Crowley and sold the story to the press. John Bull denounced Crowley as the wickedest man in the world and said they'd like to hang him. Benito Mussolini, the fascist dictator of Italy at the time, deported Crowley based on the stories in the press. When you get deported
yes.
from a country that's being run by a fascist dictator,
you
must
know.
Have done something wrong.
Yeah.
When the Second World War broke out, Crowley offered his services to the Naval Intelligence Division, but they declined. He mingled with some of the intelligence community at the time, including Roald Dahl, and Ian Fleming. He also claimed to have been behind the V for Victory sign first used by the BBC, but this is unsubstantiated. In 1940, his asthma worsened, and with his German medicine now unavailable, he turned again to heroin and became addicted again. He relocated around England several times, including London, Torquay, Aston Clinton, and Hastings. Crowley finally died on December 1st, 1947, in Hastings, of chronic bronchitis, aggravated by pleurisy and myocardial degeneration. He was 72. His funeral was held in Brighton on the 5th of December, attended by about a dozen people. Excerpts from the Gnostic Mass, the Book of the Law, and Hymn to Pan were read, and therefore was labelled a black mass by the press. His ashes were buried at a friend's house in Hampton, New Jersey. And that is about a third of his Wikipedia page. I have had to miss out so much. That's already nearly 3,500 words I've written for this. And there is so much more.
He only lived 72 years.
He only lived 72 years. But how many by God did he pack it in.
Honestly, what?
He mountaineering,
lived about five different lives there.
Use, occultist,
writer.
Author.
Yeah.
He wrote several plays. He wrote a ton of books. He's a very prolific writer. Some of the most disgusting poetry you'll ever read in your life.
I think I need to read some then.
Yes. Yeah. Really prolific writer, black magician, wickedest man in the world. And crazy story.
And I just thought he was a character on Supernatural.
Of course you did.
But that's where they must have got the character from, because
Crowley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he ends up being the king of hell, but he had but the whole thing was to kind of have power over him, they had to go to his castle in Scotland and get his bones. So it's loosely based.
Loosely based, because his bones aren't there.
Yeah.
His ashes are in New Jersey.
Yeah. But
well,
there we go.
As far as Wikipedia told me anyway. But yeah.
Wow.
Wild ride, right?
That's like, he was a really interesting. You know when they say, who would you have sitting at your dining room table if you could have
Crowley
anyone?
Crowley would be quite high
he
on my
would
list.
He would be really interesting because he's done so much and he's been everywhere as well.
Oh, I mean, again, that was a drop in the ocean for the places he went and visited and did and blah, blah, blah.
And intriguing.
And his friend Alan Bennett, who again was not the playwright Alan Bennett, it was a different Alan Bennett, but he eventually left England to go to, I think it was Burma, to study Buddhism.
Yeah.
And he is credited with bringing Buddhism to the UK.
Oh, wow.
Like, before then, it wasn't really known. Those people over there do this thing. But it wasn't known what the philosophy was or how it worked or anything. And Bennett brought it to England. And, it flourished in its own little way.
And just the people he met as well.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the lists of people.
That, I mean, the fact that he got into a fist fight with W.B. Yeats, you know, it's like, what?
What? Yeah.
You don't normally think of, like, two opposing poets actually getting into a proper scuffle.
You feel like they're going to, like, just, like, get their hankies out and just...
Well, poison pen letters, love. Poison pen letters. You know, as you open the letter, you breathe in the noxious fumes and that knackers you. But
is that where the name poison pen letter comes
from?
Yeah,
they used to literally write in poisoned ink that would exude a vapour that would...
I just thought it just meant they were just really mean to each other.
No. The poison pen letters were a real thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
God, I feel really sick now.
No, it's just something you didn't know. There's no shame in not knowing something. The only shame is not wanting to find out.
Really?
If you ask me.
Yes. Well, thank you. I do feel so much better now. I'm not really an idiot. There was so much information there. My mind is like...
I know. And like I say, that was about a third
of it. When you started off, I was like, why are you telling me like loads of weird things that happened on this date?
Yeah.
Is this going to be someone was there every time?
That was
time?
Just my way of leading you in.
Oh, thanks. Just drawing me and going and confusing me,
setting
really.
Setting the scene, it's called. Setting the scene.
So, super religious parents, they were probably a bit disappointed, I'm guessing.
Well, his dad, like I say, his dad actually died of tongue cancer when he was 11.
Right.
And I think it was after that, because he saw his dad as his hero. But, basically after that, I think his mum was pretty negligent is probably the word I would use. She didn't really want much to do with him. She was still grieving over his father, blah, blah, blah. But their entire sect...
And he turned
sect,
into a horny teenager.
Yeah, I mean, their entire sect was like cheesecloth shirts and, you know, only what you absolutely need to. Any more than that is a sin and blah, blah, blah.
Don't mix and your the fabrics literal truth and all of that.
The Bible, yeah, and that kind of thing. Yeah, so I think part of it was just... He wanted, you know, he got this glimpse of freedom from his uncle. And of course, when he went to live with his uncle in the kind of rural areas, he was breathing beautiful, clean air.
Yeah.
Not polluted with smog and all the rest of it. So his condition improved. But to a young man, suddenly experiencing all these supposedly naughty pleasures, and then you get better.
It's like, hang on a
there's
minute.
A definite link to be formed there, isn't there? So, if you know, it's not a million miles to believe that somebody that had that experience of actually while I was doing all the things God wanted me to do, I was very ill.
Yeah.
And when I started being awful.
Naughty.
I got better.
Yeah.
Maybe the thing to do is to be even more naughty.
And then I will become immortal and rule the world.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's very possibly how his kind of psychology started. Yeah.
The thing is, if from a very young age you are like have lots of kind of ideals forced upon you,
yeah,
you kind of get into almost that way of thinking. So it's mm-hmm. like the extremeness of it. Then to go the other way, you'd go the extreme the other way.
Yeah, and kids often rebel against their parents' ideals and things. So, yeah, it was like, well, I'm going to reject all that don't sin crap and I'm going to sin the hell out of things.
I'm going to sin my pants off, quite literally.
But in many ways, an absolute trailblazer in several fields.
I just love the fact that, like, while he was doing all this, like, crazy occult stuff, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to open the gates of hell and summon all of these deities. I'm going to climb a mountain.
Yeah. I didn't even know he was a mountaineer until I started researching this. Had no idea. And, yeah, he's climbed most of the Alp. And I think pretty much everything in the UK, like Snowdon and Ben Nevis, I'm pretty sure was on his list. Attempted the K2, which had never been done before. You know, he was a good mountaineer. He could have been, you know, a world-renowned explorer if it wasn't for the fact that he was
had concentrated on one
into,
thing.
You know, invoking demons.
And drugs.
Stuff. And drugs, yeah.
I do like the whole, I'm feeling a bit ill. I mean, that's what doctors used to do, though, wasn't
it?
Well, I'm feeling a bit peaky. Here, have some opium.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I'm struggling to breathe. Heroin. That's what you need. Heroin. It wasn't opium. It was heroin.
Yeah.
And they prescribed that to him. And he probably got most of the cocaine he snorted on prescription.
Mad, isn't it?
Or in various... I mean, they used to put cocaine in cough medicine. And by God, you felt better.
It's like, woohoo!
Yeah. You're flying. So, you know, your malady just sort of melted away.
Not a lot of people, like, you know, alcoholics... Like, they just went down the... I've got a bit of a throat. Can I have some cough medicine, please?
Well, you see, alcohol was for the poor people.
Yeah.
And that's why it mentioned that a lot of the nobility were teetotalers, because it was seen as rather uncouth to drink alcohol.
Wow.
If you had money, you
were
smoked opium.
You were...
Or whatever, you
were
know.
Off your tits.
Or, well, I mean, there were opium dens, and obviously there were... I don't know, because whenever you see any kind of Victorian stuff where you see an opium den, it's always the kind of down and out.
It's very
in
shady,
there. But
isn't
actually,
it?
When you read things like, you know, Sherlock Holmes went to opium dens.
Yeah.
So I think the clientele in those kind of places were probably
like
more
you had the opium. You had the opium dens, which were like slums, but then a lot of the richer people, they'd just be in the clubs, wouldn't they? Because, like, they were gentlemen's clubs.
Yeah.
And they were all like snuff and everything as well. They just
porterhouse steak and a syringe of heroin, sir. Very good. You know. And I mean, it's probably like that now.
Probably.
Who knows?
I'm not rich, so I don't know.
No. I mean, when you hear rumours of the fact that allegedly the members of the Rolling Stones all used to have up to 2 or 3 blood transfusions a year.
Yeah, I've
because
heard
they
that
were
too.
So riddled with drugs that they just basically flushed themselves completely out.
That's
and then started
madness.
Again. And then you're like, huh, if I could afford that, I don't know. Would I?
I mean,
I don't know.
I feel like maybe that's how you become immortal then. You just need to keep having blood transfusions.
Yeah, I mean, you've still got cellular degeneration and stuff.
Well,
so,
yeah,
you know,
but...
Mick Jagger still looks like a shoe.
Yeah, but he's looked like that for years.
Yeah. Well, but, yeah.
I mean, like, because I saw them, went to a gig, I was probably about 15, more than 15 years ago now.
Yeah.
18 years ago. And honestly, I stood there going, you're like the age of my granddad and you're making me feel tired.
Yeah.
Like, they literally, like, I don't know, it was hours he was running up and down that stage. And I was just like...
And I mean, you've got to think,
I'm tired from standing.
I mean, you see a lot of celebrities, though. And I mean, obviously, I know that a lot of them have hair and makeup and blah, blah, blah and everything before they're even seen out in public, because they can afford to have people do that stuff for them and pick out their clothes and blah, 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 whatever else. But, you know, you look at people like Paul Rudd, who hasn't aged in 30 years.
Forever. He's like the next Keanu Reeves.
And Keanu Reeves is another example.
Well, I mean, he's started to age a little bit now.
But
maybe he's passed
he's
on.
He's going to be older than me, and I think he looks probably younger than I do.
I'd still do him.
I'd certainly consider it. But, you know, the point being is that I wonder how much of that is just having so much money that you have access to the best healthcare.
I think it's going to be, you know, like a mixture of like genetics.
Yeah.
But then also...
Genetics is always going to play a part. But if you've got a ton of money, like we're talking a ton, like you don't have to worry about going anywhere and asking the price because it doesn't matter. You know, like I say, you will have professional chefs at your disposal that will cook all your
dietary needs,
macronutrients in every meal, and you will get exactly what you need. And, you know, if ever you need water, there will be somebody standing next to you with a bottle of water that you take two sips of and throw away or whatever. You know, it happens.
Yeah, I know,
like,
I know.
I'm sure it happens.
I know. Yeah. But then, like, I guess 72 for then was a pretty good age.
I mean, we're still talking about within living memory, love, so it's not... I don't know.
Well,
it's not young, it's not old.
Considering he had health problems at a young age...
Yeah, true.
He had... other random health issues while he was roaming. He got addicted to drugs on several occasions.
Yeah, rotted out his nose from cocaine use.
You know, I feel like 72 is pretty good.
Anytime anybody says that, all I can think of is that picture of Daniela Westerbrook with just a single nostril. That makes her look a little bit like, I don't know, it reminds me of an alien from some cartoon, but I can't think which one.
Yeah, me too.
And bless her, she didn't look well.
No.
And I'm sure she wasn't well because, you know, you don't completely... erode your nasal cavity by being well, but yeah, crazy life. And just it just always amazes me how I think if you had money back then, it went a lot further.
It did, like, my gosh,
they went to Cairo and rented an apartment.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't think I can afford to do that now.
How just getting there, I won't be able to get there, let alone rent an apartment and then live.
Yeah.
But then
And then was just like, right, now I'm off to Ceylon and Burma and
just travelling around
and China
all the
and Japan
time.
And Hawaii
but
and
then
New
I
York
suppose
and
if he's writing all these books and they're selling, he'll be getting constant money from them in theory.
Well, I think the greater part of his money came from his inheritance.
Yeah.
Because like I say, his father owned shares in a brewing company that was family owned.
Yeah.
Passed them on to him when he was little, and apparently the brewing company did very well.
Okay.
Because his father had been an engineer, I think. But by the time Crowley was born, his dad was already retired. And also, I think because they lived on his pension from his engineering job, but they also had money put away from the brewing company from dividends and profit sharing and whatever. But his dad refused to spend any of the brewing company money because it was sinful. They made alcohol, so he didn't spend any of it. So they didn't spend much on things like clothes and food because it was the bare minimum necessities.
Yeah.
And I think the only time he used money was to go around the country and be a minister.
Although, to be fair, love, if we only bought the bare necessities of food and clothes, we'd probably have a lot more money than we do now because... You know,
yeah, true,
treat yourself.
I'd be bored to bloody tears, and I'm not one for eating oatmeal all day every day.
Oh God, I hate oatmeal. Oh
yeah.
God, that'd be disgusting.
You know, did you see that in the news recently?
What?
There was, I can't remember who it was. I don't know if it was just some random on Twitter or something, but somebody had basically said, oh, everybody's going on about how they can't afford stuff and they're shopping, blah, blah, blah. I can go down to Tesco's and buy a big bag of oatmeal for 70 pence, which would make me 20 meals. I don't know what everyone's complaining about.
Bully for you.
It's like, go and live on oatmeal for the rest of your life and prove us all wrong.
You'll die of like...
No, you wouldn't. You'd probably be okay on oatmeal because there's enough nutrients in oatmeal to keep you going.
But oh my God.
How boring would your life be?
I'd say, and all the happiness would just drain away.
Not only that,
away.
Why should people...
Yeah.
You know, why should somebody who's got a bit of money think, oh, well, they're all right. They can just subsist on oatmeal all the time. I mean, it's literally the let them eat cake thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It's which apparently wasn't Marie Antoinette, but obviously has been attributed to her.
That's it.
But yeah, it's the you are so far removed from
it's like what makes you. Why is that okay
that
for
think,
people to have yeah, to do that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I hope you get bummed by a fox, quite frankly. Cause
I was going to say syphilis.
That'll
but
do.
There we go.
Yeah.
So yeah, like maybe not. So some of his decisions and actions were questionable.
Very questionable. But it was in the pursuit of either occult knowledge or pleasure.
But I wouldn't say he was particularly wicked.
For the times, you know, anybody practicing black magic is pretty much looked down upon by the rest of society in any age. But we're talking about an age where, you know, we were Victorian?
The Victorians
Edwardian?
Have a lot
maybe
to answer
Edwardian.
For. He lived
something
a long
like,
time.
Whoever was before she who is no longer with us, sadly. Anyway.
Edward.
I'm so bad with kings. It just never interested me. Never interested me. I don't care which king came where. The only interesting bit was, oh, look, King Henry VIII was a nut job. He was basically our version of Nero or Caligula, possibly, either or. But it never really interests me in the lines of succession and who was king when and blah, blah, blah. I don't really care. It was, for me, it was more interesting to hear about the fact that he was such a nut job that he seceded from the Roman Catholic Church, made up his own religion so he could divorce his wife and then chopped the heads off several others. Yeah, definitely a bit of a character. But yeah, the stuff he was writing, the lewd poetry, was extremely offensive in those days. And like I say, I've read some of it, and yeah, I can see people being offended by it, definitely.
Anyway, it was George.
It was George. Okay, yeah. So King George. There we go. So King George.
Yeah, Edward was the one that abdicated.
Oh, yeah, okay. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think George was after Victoria, wasn't he? Anyway, whatever. But the point being...
Yeah. What?
Oh, the
yeah,
times
there was,
were less.
There was George and Edward and George and Edward. There was like two Georges and two Edwards after Victoria.
I mean, the tabloids of the time would have probably just wanted to string him up because he was bisexual, not anything else.
True.
You know, that was an absolute outrage in those days.
It's an outrage.
It's an outrage.
But it's not.
But yeah, I don't know. I have no
I
words
am definitely
going to
be looking
journey.
Into him now.
Like yeah.
More because I'm intrigued.
Fascinating guy.
And
fascinating
I kind of want to read, what was one of the books that you said? I'm sure we've got one of his books.
No, we haven't.
Have we not?
We've got a book called The Book of Lies.
Ah.
But that's not by him.
Damn.
That's
a body language one, isn't it? Or
no.
Something. No,
it's not. It's actually a book on ceremonial magic, funnily enough.
Okay, is there something you want to tell me?
I've practiced some of it in my time just to see what was going on. And
is
the results...
that how you ended up with me?
No.
It went terribly wrong.
I don't know.
Hi.
Maybe. I don't know. But the results were eye-opening, to say the least.
Really? What? Can you tell me?
No.
Why not? Is it embarrassing?
No, I just don't want to talk about it on a podcast.
Okay, tell me later.
I dabbled. On my own. I didn't get particularly into it.
Is it since we've been together?
No. God, no.
Oh, is it like when you were younger?
When I was younger.
Oh, I dabbled when I was younger.
Yeah.
And we can talk about this afterwards.
Okay. Well, this book is, and I can't remember the name of the brand, but I've got a few of their books, and they're all fascinating on a variety of topics. You know
with
that?
The little circle with the horns.
With the horns. Yeah, disinformation.
Yes.
Disinformation, yeah. It was them. It was those guys. So I've got the two books of things you're not supposed to know.
Yes.
And they're fascinating because in one of those, it tells you that Freud was a fraud, that literally of his six case files that are supposed formed the entire body of his work.
Some weren't even his.
None of them were cured. Some weren't his.
Yeah.
And I think one of them... His main case that he was like, here you go, I've used psychotherapy and she's now cured. She ended up in an asylum within 3 months of him publishing.
Wow.
Yeah, he absolutely absolute fraud, complete fraud, which is ironic considering his name. But also there was a pope that wrote erotic poetry, or it might have been, it was either poetry or just erotic stories, porn basically, of the time. So one of the popes did that. So those books are fascinating, and they're called like 50 Things You're Not Supposed to Know and 50 Things You're Not Supposed to Know 2. And one of them I lent out and never got back, and I think I've since rebought it.
You did, because I remember you buying it.
But the Book of Lies is by them, and that's all on magic, basically, supposed magic and la 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 la. And the first article in it is by Grant Morrison, who writes a lot of comics and stuff like that, mostly comics. I'm trying to think. I don't know if Paper Girls was one of his, actually.
I think it might have been, because I remember we talking about
But he's quite famously, I don't know of any other way to say it, but an out magician, if you like. So he's comfortable in public talking about the fact that he practices ceremonial magic. And his first thing is on pop magic. So it's about kind of making it accessible to people and practicing magic in ways that they can do easily. But there's lots of stuff in there as well from loads of people, and some of it makes sense and some of it doesn't, and some of it isn't supposed to, and blah, blah. So no, we do not have any Aleister Crowley books in the house.
Or Alistair?
No.
No?
No. None of his books in the house. As far as I'm aware, I don't think I've ever bought anything by him, but we do have some other select tomes of interest.
Indeed. Okay, cool. I will ferret those out then.
All right, okay. Should I be worried?
Well, if you start feeling
start
a bit tingly, and you start levitating. Just, you know,
I'll be at work, like brushing my head across the ceiling going, this is odd.
It's like, Mike, why are you walking like
a ceiling's like 15 feet high? What's going on?
What? You're looking taller today. You seem to be floating like an inch off the floor.
Yeah, that's a bit odd. Which is kind of weird because I have taken some levitation photography in that place before now, where I got somebody to sit on a clear box and then photoshopped out the box so it looks like they were levitating. I've done that before.
I took a picture of you levitating once.
You did, yes. Yes. You did. I have the ability to jump into the air and fold my legs up into a cross-legged seating position.
We'll post it on Instagram.
We'll post the photo on Instagram. But it's just camera trickery, really. I just jumped and we used a fast shutter speed to freeze me in midair.
You've just given away all of your secrets. A magician shouldn't reveal his
secrets. Oh, good point.
Cut that bit out.
It's real levitation. Well, I don't really know where we go from there, other than to say it's probably about time we rounded things up.
It is. We have a few things to say, though, before we give, that stuff. Now, I just need to check something, because our lovely daughter gave me a fun fact, and I know we haven't done one of those in a while, but I just wanted to actually check that she wasn't making things up, because, you know, also, I can't remember exactly what it was.
That's really weird as well, because I saw a couple of things that were supposed to be fun facts, and I can't remember
what was,
them
hold
now.
Hold on, hold on. It's going to be like, what? Okay, you ready?
I am.
So this is what our lovely daughter told me the other day.
Okay.
She said, do you know that turtles flirt by slapping each other around the face?
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what?
It is true.
And it is true.
I've seen it.
I had to double check.
Yeah.
But yes, they will go up to another turtle and like flutter their little
flippers.
They kind of
bap back and forth, don't they, like that?
Bap and slap each other around the face. And I was just like, wow, that's really weird. But obviously, how would you flirt if you were a turtle?
I mean, it's probably no weirder than the courtship rituals of humans if you were viewing them as a turtle. Why aren't those guys slapping each other around the face? What's going on there? Yeah.
Sound effects.
And why are the females the ones that are presenting all the colours and grandeur when it's usually the males in most animals?
Indeed.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. Apart from certain tribes in Africa where it's the men that dress up and put on makeup to impress the women.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a fun fact for
it
you.
Is.
It's a cute fact.
Turtles are slap happy when it comes to love.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. And we've got a shout out.
We have.
To the Night's End podcast.
Yep.
Which is featuring our very own Mike.
Hello.
In the latest episode. What was the piece called?
It's episode 18 and it's called The Boxborn Wraith. And I am narrating.
Excellent. So yes, check it out for more dulcet tones of him over there.
Hello.
It sounded a bit like Mr. Bean then. Anyway.
Yes.
If you're still with us, you're still listening, thank you. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. Found it intriguing. Go out and find Aleister Crowley and...
have a look at his Wikipedia page, because honestly, I had to cut so much stuff out.
Blew your tiny mind.
I definitely did a highlight, so, you know, some of the other stuff isn't quite as crazy, but it's all interesting.
But yes. If you are interested in following us, we have a Facebook page.
Facebook.com/Stories of Strangeness.
There's a group and a page. Yep. We also have Instagram.
Instagram.com/Stories of Strangeness.
If you would like to support our little venture,
endeavor,
you can do it in a couple of different ways. Mm-hmm. We have a Redbubble account where we have our logo and other random pictures and bits and bobs that you can purchase, plastered all over random items of clothing and household
homeware,
goods. You can also nip on over to Patreon if you would like extra content. We are releasing minisodes every other week as well. So there's now like 30 odd, almost 40 minisodes with extra random bits thrown in there, outtakes, etc. And that equates to about £3 a month.
That's a £3 a month.
And
so about the cost of a coffee.
Do you know what? I spent like £5.50 on a hot chocolate earlier, and I don't know how.
Jesus, did it take you out for a meal
afterwards? It was like a bucket, and it had cream. Like, I wanted cream. They didn't have any cream left. I was really disappointed.
I've literally
disappointed.
Got this image of you carrying around
literally
a pail.
A proper bucket size, and I was just like, gulp, 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 I want more.
Do you have one that has a spout I'm tending to spill? Yeah, but for about the price of less than a bucket of coffee, you can get access to all our minisodes. And if you do want to just dip your toe in the water and try and see what the kind of stuff we're doing is, there are two free minisodes. So if you have a Patreon account, which is free to sign up for, you can pop on there and listen to those.
Yep. And we've done Redbubble. Oh yeah. Need to say that Redbubble, you need to search for
Zoe and Mike,
all one word.
Yep. There we go. And then we have a coffee page. So if you'd rather not sign up for extra content and subscription fees, even though they're dirt cheap and you get loads of free money, you can chuck us a couple of quid on coffee as
and
a one-off.
And I'll go and buy a bucket of hot chocolate.
Yeah, we'll go and get a bucket of hot chocolate. Actually, no, I don't really like hot chocolate. I'm going to get a bucket of tea because I'm an Englishman and that's what we do.
So literally, you would, wouldn't you?
I'd drink an awful lot of tea. Yeah.
You do. It's scary.
I drink a lot anyway. Just anything. Liquids. Puddles. Not mercury.
Puddles.
Yeah.
Swimming pools.
Yeah.
Rain.
I've been known to suck the dew off a pine tree.
Oh, God. Anyway, with that in mind, or not in mind, don't think about it, I think we're going to call it a day.
Yeah, it's got to that point.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Love you.